Another unbelievable late September day. It's dry, it's warm, and it'll go down as the driest and warmest September on record in these parts. No mention of rain through next week, and on that note, we go outdoors with Steve Kearney, stevekearneyoutdoors.com. Steve, this very unusual weather continues.
Good afternoon, Steve. Yes, I think I'm the only one on the planet that's complaining about 85 degrees, but it's going to move in the right direction this week. We need a big front coming in, which looks like it's coming, dropping about 20 degrees, 25 degrees, and that's exactly what we need. That's going to get the fishing ramped up. It's going to get the deer moving. It's going to move a few ducks around starting on Tuesday, and this is what we need. It's been too nice for too long, so I think this is going to make a big difference for people in the outdoors. And
Steve Kearney joining us. Steve, yeah, the wait for the fall bite, and as you've pointed out, recent years, it's been later and later and later. It's just those water temps have been hanging in there. Here we are at the end of September, and, you know, I look out at Old Man River, and there's people still out there water skiing and tubing. They're having a great time, the water temp. Now, granted, they're kids, so they can tolerate a little bit cooler temp, but still very unusual for late September.
Well, you know, the recreational people certainly like it, but, you know, fisher people, we just kind of wait for that water temperature to get down in the 60s, and that kind of ignites things and gets them moving, and they're feeding more actively during the day. But it is not going to happen, you know, when you got water temperatures in the middle 70s and air temperatures upper 80s. But I just tell people, hang on, just be patient. It's going to come. And every year, you know, September teases you like this, like you're waiting for those fronts to come in and getting some ducks to move out of the, you know, out of the north, and we look forward to that to happen, but it can be painstakingly slow at this time of the year. But I think we're done with the 80s. It's going to be 60s and 50s now, I think, for quite some time, and everything will be rocking and rolling in a couple of weeks. Crops will be coming down, the deer are going to be much more active. You know, there'll be some minor flights of ducks moving down from the calendar. They usually come down the 5th to the 10th of October, canvasbacks, redheads. So there'll be kind of a smattering of that. And then, of course, fishing will pick up. So the best is yet to come. Just be patient. Give it 10 days, 2 weeks, and things will be radically different.
Early in the bow season, you got a deer. What did you see this week out in the stand?
You know, it's still so hot, Steve. I've been out there for, my sits are not much longer than an hour and a half, and I was fortunate to tag a deer about 10 days ago, which is great, but I haven't been going out because it's been so warm at night that I don't want to leave that deer in the back of my pickup when it's 70 degrees at night. So I'm waiting till Tuesday when things cool off, and I'll be back in the stands and hitting it hard. And you know, crops are kind of coming down. They're just starting to get the beans, and they'll be working on the corn, and that will improve things as well. So, again, it's going to get better, and especially when we get 40s at night, 60s during the day. That's exactly what we need. So I'm looking forward to that.
I know it's still a little early, but it's coming up quickly. What have you heard about pheasants so far and pheasant numbers? Because I know that's a favorite hunt for many.
Yeah, I've heard that, you know, the very southwest tip of Minnesota is probably the best area so far this year, but you know, I've heard a lot of mixed reports, and up through the western, northwestern area where I am, I'm not seeing any broods on the roads in the morning, which is not a very good sign. You know, we had a very mild winter, which was great, but then we had really heavy rains in the nesting season, and that was really tough on the birds. So, again, we really don't know for sure. When the crops start coming down, then those birds will start showing up. But I think right now nobody really knows for sure. I do know the grouse numbers are up. A lot of my cronies are up in the northern part of Minnesota are having a banner year with grouse. So if you're thinking grouse versus pheasants, I would go for the grouse because they're doing very well. They're in their 10-year cycle. Their numbers are up. And that's been really encouraging. So that's something to think about because that's the number one game bird in the state of Minnesota.
So it will cool down, looks like middle of next week. No bitter cold, but it's still very dry. And I'm sure you see it in the woods, and you see it with water levels. We definitely could use some rain, and I don't see any over the next week.
Yeah, I've looked at it too, Steve. I stay, you know, pretty on top of stuff like that, and a lot of our lakes are really getting down there. Our river systems are getting down there, and I don't see rain for more than 10 days. And, yeah, that's tough. But on the flip side, if you're a deer hunter, a bow hunter, you got to think about hitting those water sources, because when it's this hot and there's so little water choices, that's a really good spot to be setting a stand, because they will be hitting that water a couple times a day. And it's also affected the ducks, too. A lot of the potholes have dried up, and, you know, the birds are using a lot of bigger water right now because there are not any very small water opportunities. So, you know, things evolve, things change, and you just kind of have to adapt accordingly.
All right, always good to visit with you, Steve. We'll do it again in 1 week.
All right, sounds great, Steve. Take care.
There he is, Steve Kearney. StevekearneyOutdoors.com has been joining us for years here on the weekend. And by the way, we don't want you to forget that our outdoors coverage continues tomorrow afternoon between 5 and 6. It's Rob Dreisein from the Outdoor News. He has a great show every Sunday, sports schedules permitting, between 5 and 6. He's got great guests and a lot of great info every Sunday between 5 and 6. Rob Dreisein from the Outdoor News here on News Talk E3OWCCO. It is 4:14. Huge news on Friday night. Obviously, the Twins eliminated from playoff contention. But how about the Timberwolves? They trade Karl Anthony Towns to the New York Knicks. And we'll get an update on that. Man who's covered the Timberwolves for a while now, Chris Hine, will join us from the Star Tribune momentarily to sort it all out here on News Talk. E3OWCCO. It was an unusual Friday in the world of sports. This is when it comes to the Minnesota teams. The Twins eliminated from playoff contention. They really have struggled lately. And then we learned Karl Anthony Towns has been traded to the New York Knicks. Someone who's been covering the Timberwolves for quite a while now, and all over this story, cat to the Knicks, is Chris Hine from the Star Tribune. Chris, good to visit with you.
How you doing, Steve? Good to talk to you.
Yeah. Wow. That was my response when I saw that emerge on the social media. Wow. Now, here's the crazy thing. Karl Anthony Towns on the move has been rumored for a while. This really shouldn't come as a surprise, especially with all the ties to the Knicks. And you lay all that out in your piece on this trade, that Karl Anthony Towns has a lot of ties to the New York Knicks, and they've coveted Cat for a while.
They have. You know, Leon Rose, his former agent, runs the team. Gerson Rosas, the former Wolves president, is part of the front office. Tom Thibodeau, the coach, obviously, hometown team, you know, he's from New Jersey, all that stuff. And, you know, it's funny, we have been talking about this, you know, a cat trade. It was much more prevalent last summer when it maybe wasn't looking like the Gobert-Towns experiment could work. You know, the team was coming off of a bit of a disappointing year. But, you know, after this year, and when you go through free agency and they don't make a major move, you think, okay, well, they're running it back, and Carl's going to be a part of that mix next season as well. And then I think we all assume that after this coming season, then they maybe have some really important decisions that they had to make. But it was, I think that's what's most shocking about this, is just the timing of it, that this didn't come in, you know, July, and it's coming on the eve of training camp. That, to me, is the biggest part of this. When you trace it, it's like, yes, the Knicks have had interest in him for a while now. They have, you know, always kind of checked in on him with the Wolves, and, you know, the I guess the biggest piece, missing piece to the puzzle of making this deal work was the Knicks putting Dante DiVincenzo on the table, who was somebody that the Wolves were looking at in free agency in the summer of 2023. And once the Knicks were willing to do that, it came together. And, you know, it's a move that I think you look at it and say it's a more of a move for the longer term than the short term. But the big question is just how much is this going to potentially cost them next season, or, you know, affect their record next season, or chances of making a deep playoff run? And that's very uncertain right now in my eyes.
Yeah, and the Timberwolves are dealing with a couple of things. They have the untradeable situation with Rudy Gobert. They gave up a lot to get Gobert, and, you know, chances are they're not going to find a taker for Gobert. They're kind of there. And then they have Mike Conley, who's getting up there age-wise, and how many minutes is Conley going to be able to play and continue? And, oh, by the way, Carl starts a brand-new max contract right now. And that was really a big-picture concern. You have Gobert, you have Ant, and you have Carl Anthony Towns, and they had almost no financial flexibility for the foreseeable future with that situation.
They did not, and that is where I think this comes into play. It's in this new world of the NBA with the second apron, quote-unquote, you know, where the NBA now just, in addition to imposing a hefty luxury tax fine on teams, really restricts their ability to roster build if they're at a certain threshold above, you know, the luxury tax. It's really untenable for the long term to have three players on maximum contracts like the Wolves had in Gobert, Edwards, and Towns. But again, I think we just all assumed and thought, especially when nothing happened this summer, that the Wolves were just going to run it back one more year, give it their best shot to try to win a title, and then address, you know, try to kick the can down the road a little bit and address those concerns next offseason. But they decided to do it now. So it wasn't a tenable situation for the longest time, the way this roster was constructed. We just didn't know which domino was going to fall. You know, Rudy Gobert is under contract for one more year plus a player option here. So you don't know quite what's going to happen with him. Ant and McDaniels are under five-year deals, so you know you have them. But Naz Reid also factors into this because he has a player option after this season as well. And I think the Wolves would like to keep him around long-term. So this move, I think, is also a signal that Naz Reid is very much in the future plans of this franchise. We'll see about Julius Randle, who is making, I think, about $29 million this coming season. And, you know, where does he potentially fit in? You know, it's kind of a year to see how he's going to fit. You know, Chris Finch has familiarity with him from his days as an assistant in New Orleans. And, you know, he's kind of in a situation where he's in a semi-contract year because he also has a player option after this season. So he can decline that and enter free agency if he has a good year. So now there's a lot of pieces up in the air for the Wolves, but I think Tim Connelly would like Gobert around for longer than just this season. I know he wants Naz Reid around for longer than just this season, and we'll see about Julius Randle.
There's another part of this that came out on social media, and you've got to take all of that stuff with a grain of salt, and the reaction of some of the fans and the people that, with air quotes here, follow the Timberwolves very closely and post a lot about the Timberwolves, that this had Glenn Taylor's fingerprints all over it, that this is Glenn being cheap. And the fact that Glenn Taylor and Mark Lowry and Alex Rodriguez still have ownership issues to settle here before the end of the year. How much do you buy that either Mark Lowry and A-Rod partners and then Glenn Taylor, who still at the moment has controlling interest to the club, that'll be settled, I would think, through binding arbitration, played into this decision-making?
I don't think that that's a fair characterization to say that they, you know, that they're the ownership, whichever group you want
sure.
to assign
yep.
blame to, is being cheap. They're still paying a very heavy luxury tax for next season. Yes, they are saving money in the short term on this deal. I think it's about $9 million in salary, which calculates to even more when you do the luxury tax. I don't know the exact math on that, but they are saving a significant amount of money here, but they're still paying a hefty tax for next season. And going forward, you know, it's not as if I just think this money is kind of being kicked down the road in a sense, because I do think of like the fact that they're probably going to want to pay Naz Reid and Rudy Gobert. I just don't know that characterizing this move as simply a cost cutting move is necessarily that accurate.
Yeah, and I also remember, and correct me if I'm wrong, that it was actually Alex Rodriguez and Mark Lowry that said going forward they would need to take a look at those payroll considerations with the idea of, you know, we don't necessarily want to run this team, you know, paying that hefty luxury tax going forward. I remember reading something along those lines where Glenn Taylor at this point in his ownership was pretty thrilled with going to the Western Conference Finals and, you know, being in the mix and his team winning here at the end of his ownership tenure, or what appeared to be the end of his ownership tenure. So I just wanted to put that out there, that I think we have no way of knowing, you know, if ownership, you know, had a lot of saying, we got to get rid of Cat, we got to cut payroll.
That's not the sense I'm getting. Yeah. I think what you're probably referring to is a leaked report that appeared on ESPN saying that Mark Lowry and Alex Rodriguez submitted a budget that had the Wolves at the luxury tax line and unwilling to pay the luxury tax. Mark Lowry and Alex Rodriguez have never come out and said that they were unwilling to pay the luxury tax. Mark Lowry has said that he has a lot of money waiting to be used to help the Wolves win a championship. That's what he has said on the record. Glenn Taylor, you know, obviously he's running the show now. He's shown the willingness to go into the luxury tax this season to keep this thing going. And I just, you know, I don't think that that's necessarily the right view of this, to call just the ownership cheap and it's just a cost-cutting move, because I think it's just it's a longer term view of trying to sustain success around Anthony Edwards is how I think the front office is looking at this. So you do have some big money decisions to make here. It's just who is going to be getting that money long term. And yes, there's an aspect of how much ownership and how long ownership is willing to stay in the luxury tax. That is the cost of doing business in the NBA. And I think both ownership parties recognize that if you want to be competitive for, you know, a 3 to 5 year window in the NBA, especially as a mid-sized market like Minnesota is, you have to go into the luxury tax at some point. That's just the cost of doing business in the NBA. Every team that's a contender runs up against that. So, you know, I think that they're very cognizant of that, both parties in this view. And, you know, I think that's something that they're willing to do as long as they can see that the Wolves have a serious chance of success, which last year obviously proved.
Chris Hine joining us on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline. Beyond that, just another thought, and that is, you know, your cornerstone guy going forward, and that is Anthony Edwards. And how does this trade impact Ant and his mindset going into the season, where the expectations for the fans are quite high? Now, they got players in return that definitely can play in the NBA and will contribute. But, you know, what's Ant's mindset after this move? That'll be
hard,
interesting.
Hard to tell. I mean, I'm fortunate enough to be working on a book about Anthony Edwards this summer, and talking to people that have known him throughout his life. One thing that I think stands out about Ant is he's always supportive of his teammates. He's always supportive of the people around him at any level that he's ever been at. So I think my gauge is that he's not going to be like upset, but he, like Karl Anthony Towns, and you know, they had a lot of success here together. And Cat played a big part, especially, you know, in Ant's second season, of helping Ant develop, because they had really good offensive chemistry. So if I had to guess, I think he's very appreciative of Carl and everything that he meant to him personally and the team. At the same time, Ant is going to try to win with who he's got, and he's going to ride with them. He's going to support them. He's going to uplift them. So new guys coming in, I think he's going to be the same way. And I think, you know, it's just a further signal, and it's kind of been a gradual process here, that this franchise is Anthony Edwards's, you know, and it is for the foreseeable future as long as he is in Minnesota. You know, and that's one of the things that I think people should probably appreciate about Carl Anthony Towns' tenure here is that Carl, whenever he was asked to sacrifice or cede ground, so to speak, whether it be with the Rudy Gobert trade and shifting positions, whether it be ceding, you know, kind of quote unquote face of the franchise, that mantra to Ant over time, he always did it graciously. He always did it, you know, without tension. And I think that really helped this team have the success that it did last year, because at his core, Cat was a good teammate. He was, you know, seemingly a good guy, and he handled those kind of issues with a grace that I don't think a lot of players in the NBA necessarily would have, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And he didn't get traded to the Charlotte Hornets. He's going to New York. He's going to play 41 regular season games at Madison Square Garden. I mean, that's definitely
I think you're right, and maybe obviously I think it's probably a shock right now, and it's a shock to everybody. But I think ultimately, if there is one thing that maybe takes some of the sting out of it for Carl, it is the fact that he's playing for the Knicks, close to home, childhood team, all that. So, you know, maybe at the end of the day, once the initial sting wears off, you know, like you said, it is a different situation than playing for another market that isn't going to be as competitive as the Knicks will be next season, for sure.
Yeah, and the max salary will help.
Those paychecks will help, absolutely.
All right, Chris, always good to visit with you. Thanks so much.
Yep. Thank you, Steve. Appreciate it.
Chris Hine from the Star Tribune covers the Timberwolves, joining us on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline. Quick break. We'll update that weather. Warm and dry through next week. No mention of rain through next Friday at the earliest here in the Twin Cities. And then a big college football scoreboard, Jonathan Lowell, Big Ten, Top 25, Missouri Valley, Pioneer League, Tommy's are idle today. And then I'll have a rundown of the regional scoreboard, MIAC, Johnny's Royals in Arden Hills today, Northern Sun scoreboard. It is all on the way. And then Twins later, Twins and Orioles in our lineup card beginning at 5:30 today here on News Talk. 830-WCCO. Huge game today in the MIAC. St. John's at Bethel. Perennial powers in the MIAC went at it. Arden Hills will have a score. We'll take a look at the box score in more detail coming up. But first, we go to the Big Ten, the Top 25, the Missouri Valley, the Pioneer League, and with the honors. Here's Jonathan Lowe.
Thank you very much, DVT. Good afternoon to you. It is bright. It is sunny. There ain't no clouds in the sky. I'm telling you right now, it is a picture-perfect June day across the upper Midwest. But it ain't June, folks. There's gridirons being played on. There's whistles being talked about. There's a lot of stuff happening right now because, as you know, it is a Saturday in the fall, y'all. College football is here, there, and everywhere. And we get it rolling in the Big Ten. And we go to the Coliseum out west to Los Angeles. It is early third quarter, and Wisconsin, after trailing early 7-0, they have responded to USC, the 13th-ranked Trojans, trailing the Badgers 21-10. Again, early third quarter in the L.A. Coliseum. Finals from earlier today. Number 12, Michigan, had its way early with Minnesota. They were up 24-3 heading into the fourth quarter. The Gophers did respond. They scored 21 in the fourth, but they ran out of time. Michigan gets a 27-24 win, goes to 4-1 on the season. The Gophers drop to 2-3. Great effort at the Big House, but unfortunately, Gophers, it was too little too late. Indiana wins over Maryland, and the Hoosiers are now 5-0 on the season. 42-28 the final there. Nebraska gets a 28-10 win over Purdue. The Cornhuskers are now 4-1 after losing to Illinois last week. Speaking of those fighting Brett Bielema's, that is the next game, next set of games up on tap for kickoff at around 6:30. It'll be number 19 Illinois in Happy Valley to play number 9 Penn State. Number 3 Ohio State will be on the road at Michigan State. And then late tonight it'll be number 8 Oregon at the Rose Bowl to take on UCLA. Last night, Rutgers got to 4-0 on the season after they took down Washington 21-18 to the top 25 scoreboard. And we have an Edstead update from Austin. The number 1 Texas Longhorns have gone into the half, now up 14-6. They get into the end zone. Mississippi State, with just under 2 minutes to play in the half, gets a field goal to get to 7-6. Texas gets into the end zone, 14-6 Longhorns at the half in Austin. Other games, early third quarter at AT&T Stadium in Arlington, number 24 Texas A&M in Arkansas tied at 14. Early third quarter in South Bend, number 16 Notre Dame leading number 15 Louisville 24-14. Early third quarter in Jordan-Hare in Auburn, it's the Tigers leading number 21 Oklahoma 14-7. Finals from the day. Number 22 BYU got up early on Baylor and they were kicking their tail, but the Bears came back, made it close, but the Cougars get to 5-0 on the season with a 34-28 win. BYU again undefeated after their win in Texas today. Number 23 Kansas State takes down number 20 Oklahoma State 42-20. It was number 6 Ole Miss having to fight off Kentucky. They couldn't get their offense going, and the Wildcats score late. The first big upset of the day. Number 6 Ole Miss goes down 20-17 to the Wildcats. Coming up later on this evening, it'll be number 18 Iowa State at Houston. Number 17 Clemson will host Stanford in an ACC matchup. Again, I'm going to continue to say it. It's weird to say. Number 4 Alabama hosts number 2 Georgia in the game of the night, the game of the year to this point. It'll be number 14 LSU at home against South Alabama. Number 25 Boise State will be on the blue turf hosting undefeated Washington State. Number 10 Utah will be at home as they take on Arizona. And last night it was number 7 Miami having to come back. They were down to Virginia Tech by 10 late in the game. They come back to win 38-34 and stay undefeated. The Hurricanes now 5-0 on the season. To the Missouri Valley and FCS. North Dakota State, they're having an easy time of it with Illinois State. It's late in the fourth quarter, 42-10. The Bison are ahead. North Dakota, they scored a lot of points today over Murray State as they win 72-35 at the Alaris Center in Grand Forks. South Dakota, they win today at home at the Dakota Dome over Southern Illinois, 42-13. South Dakota State had the week off, as does St. Thomas from the Pioneer League. Both of those teams with the week off. So we're still watching a couple of these games to see if there are any more potential upsets out there, Steve. But right now, some of this stuff is holding pat.
Yeah. All right, Jonathan. Very good job. But the Golden Gophers come up short. Little Brown Jug on the line. We'll have another rundown of some of the key games coming up following the news and weather at 5 o'clock. Let's get you up to date on what's going on around the area. Let's start in the MIAC. Huge showdown, Perennial Powers, St. John's at Bethel today in Arden Hills. And the Johnnies roll to the victory today. It was St. John's winning big there. 45-20 of the final today. St. John's just too much in the football game today, and it was certainly a warm one. Taking a look at some of the stats, Johnnies led it 21-7 after one. They led it 28-13 at the half, and then outscored Bethel in quarters 3 and 4, 17-7. Final, St. John's 45-7 in the football game today. Some of the individual stats: Aaron Syverson, St. John's quarterback, 28-38, 362 yards, 3 touchdowns, 2 picks on the ground. Caden Wheeler, 20 carries, 86 yards, and a touchdown for the Johnnies. Dylan Wheeler, 9 receptions, 113 yards, and 2 touchdowns today as St. John's rolls to the victory today once again in Arden Hills. Other games in the MIAC today: Gustavus shut out Augsburg in Minneapolis 28-0. Carlton a winner at Hamlin 24-14, the final there. And it was Concordia shutting out St. Scholastica today in Moorhead. Cobbers win 35-0. One game under the lights tonight. This is in St. Paul. St. Olaf at McAllister. 7 o'clock start. Quick peek at next week in the MIAC. And These are all 1 o'clock starts. Next Saturday, McAllister in Duluth, St. Scholar Azteca, Hamlin at St. Olaf, Bethel visits Gustavus, Augsburg travels to St. John's, and Concordia will make the trip down to Northfield, where they will play Carlton. Let's get to the Northern Sun. Some big showdowns there. Let's start with this one in Moorhead. The Dragons are for real. MSU Moorhead beat Augustana 43-41. The Vikings, another favorite in the Northern Sun this year to get to the postseason. But the Dragons beat the Vikings 43-41. Minnesota State, a winner at Concordia St. Paul, 33-20. Bemidji blows out Mary, 41-7. UMD pounds Southwest Minnesota State, 62-0. And Minot State knocked off Sioux Falls, 26-16. Remember, the Cougars earlier in the year came to St. Paul and beat St. Thomas. They lose at Minot today, 26-6. Mary was idle today. Out of the WIAC, just one game. They jump into conference play next week. River Falls on the road at Mount St. Joseph in Ohio. And River Falls rolls 68-9 the final in that one. By the way, Mount St. Joseph, that's in Cincinnati. That's a road trip. Coming up next Saturday, openers in the WIAC, Eau Claire at River Falls, Platteville visits La Crosse. La Crosse, the favorite this year. Oshkosh travels to Whitewater, and Stout will be at Stevens Point. And they are off this week in the UMAC. No action this week in the UMAC. They get started next Saturday. It'll be Morris at Martin Luther. Crown visits Northwestern, and Greenville will be at Westminster. And, of course, with the twin season ending tomorrow, we'll jump into college football final and get a ton of game reports next Saturday here on News Talk 830 WCCO. When we come back, we'll talk Twins. Disappointing end. Their playoff hopes came to a close on Friday night at Target Field. Twins and Orioles tonight. Lineup card at 5:30, first pitch after 6. We'll talk more Twins. By the way, Phil Miller from the Star Tribune follows another scoreboard right after the news here on News Talk 830-WCCO. Yeah, it's been a tough go of it for the home nine. Twins and Orioles tonight and then tomorrow, and that's it. The dream of making the postseason came to a close Friday night with the loss to the Orioles, and they have now dropped 5 of 6. Do Young Park, who we've visited with a number of times this season, covers the team for MLB.com. And in his game story, he laid it out. Who would have believed that the Twins wouldn't be in the postseason when they had a gigantic lead in the wild card? As a matter of fact, they led the Tigers by 11 games on August 10th. The Tigers now poised to be the number two wild card. The Royals will be the number three. And the Twins won't be a part of the postseason after not only winning the division a year ago, but claiming a series victory over the Toronto Blue Jays in the wild card round. So they will not be in the mix, and they limp to the end of the season. The only good thing, the weather tonight at Target Field, and again tomorrow for the season finale against the Orioles. And following the game last night when the Twins did get beat and were officially eliminated, the manager, Rocco Baldelli, talked about how disappointed he was on how the season came to an end.
You know, the disappointment of the moment is probably the thing that's hard for me to get over at this, you know, this moment, at this, you know, this minute in time. I mean, this is every guy in there, every person in there, man and woman, puts in a lot. There's a lot that goes into this. This is not something that we do part of the time. This is, we live here. We live here at the ballpark. And guys, these guys dedicate their lives to playing the game and doing it in the best possible way. And I don't think many people would believe the work that they put in to do their best when the game starts. So when you put in a lot of work into something emotionally and you come up short and you have to acknowledge that, That's never going to be pleasant. But
yeah, and that is the manager, Rocco Baldelli, post-game. There will be much more on that on the lineup card beginning at 5:30, and then we'll have much more on the Twins tomorrow on the huddle. with Pete Najarian and Dave Schwartz between 10 and noon. We still have more on the Twins. Phil Miller, who's covered the club all season long, will join us following the news, the weather, and the football scoreboard moments away here on News Talk. 830-WCCO.